Today we're stepping into a story that feels like it's straight out of a horror movie, but it's all too real for the guy at the center of it. So get comfortable and maybe keep the light on. You're going to want it. Our story starts in Reed City, Michigan. It stands as a testament to small-town America's enduring charm and resilience. With a modest population that hovers around 2,400 residents, this community is a place where everyone truly might know your name. Established in the 1870s, Reed City quickly became a hub for lumber and railway industries, pivotal sectors that shaped its early growth and character. The city's historical significance is still visible today, with well-preserved Victorian architecture dotting its downtown area, inviting a glance back in time. Reed City is strategically positioned at the crossroads of two major trails, the White Pine Trail and the Pierre Marquette Trail, making it a beacon for outdoor enthusiasts. These trails, which offer miles of scenic paths for biking, hiking, and snowmobiling, embody the spirit of adventure and the deep connection to nature that defines the area. The local county fair is a highlight for Reed City. It's more than just an annual event. It's a celebration of the community's agricultural roots and a gathering that unites families, neighbors, and visitors in a showcase of local talent, crafts, and produce. Despite its small size, Reed City's community spirit and natural beauty make it a notable spot on the map of Michigan, offering a peaceful yet vibrant lifestyle to its residents. Our main character is Alex Thompson. He's a 28-year-old Reed City native. He embodies the spirit of his hometown, while holding aspirations that stretch beyond its borders. Following his graduation from Reed City High School, Alex ventured out to Michigan State University, where he immersed himself in the world of finance, earning a bachelor's degree with the ambition of carving out a career in the financial sector. Upon completing his education, the pull of his family ties and a sense of belonging drew Alex back to Reed City, where he secured a position at the local credit union. This role, though stable and community-oriented, falls short of igniting his passion, serving more as a means to support himself while staying connected to his roots. Alex's true escapade begins outside the confines of his day job, in the sprawling forests and serene landscapes of Michigan. It is here, in the great outdoors, that Alex feels most alive. So, on a clear October evening, with the leaves turning shades of red and gold, Alex decides to explore a part of the Manistee National Forest he's never been to before. It's a vast wilderness stretching out over a million acres, with trails that weave through dense woods and along riverbanks. He's about an hour's drive from Reed City. He parked his car in a little clearing off Nine Mile Road, near the Pine River. His plan? A quick hike to clear his head. Maybe catch a glimpse of the setting sun through the trees. But as the daylight started to fade, the forest doesn't seem as welcoming as it did when he first started. There's a stillness, a quiet that feels almost suffocating. And that's when Alex feels it, this unmistakable sensation of being watched. He stops, he listens, but the forest is silent. Then a low growl breaks the stillness, not from a distance, but disturbingly close. Alex's mind races. Is it a bear? A wolf? But what he sees next, in a small clearing ahead, doesn't fit any logical explanation. It's massive, easily 8 feet tall, standing upright on legs that seem too human for the rest of its body. Its fur, a mix of black and gray, bristles in the dim light. But it's the face that sends a shock of fear through Alex. A long snout, ears that pointed to the sky, and eyes that seem to pierce right through him. The smell then hits him, this nauseating smell of wet garbage, and something far worse. Alex knows he needs to move, he needs to get out of there, but his feet are rooted to the spot. What happens next is a blur of adrenaline and fear. Alex is standing there, in the dwindling light of the Manistee National Forest, staring down at a creature that, until this moment, he would have said it couldn't have existed. This thing, this dog-like creature, as some later called it, stood mere yards away, its breath forming misty clouds in the cool air, and its eyes are locked on Alex. For a moment, the world seemed to stand still. The usual sounds of the forest were gone, replaced by the pounding of Alex's heart in his ears. He knew he had to make a move, but fear rooted him to that spot. Then, as if sensing his panic, the creature took a step forward, a low growl rumbling from its throat. Instinct took over. Alex turned and ran, not daring to look back, his mind racing with every horror story he'd ever heard. Branches whipped at his face, roots threatened to trip him, but fear propelled him forward. He could hear it behind him, the heavy footsteps of this creature breaking through the underbrush, the growls growing louder and closer. Somehow, Alex found a burst of speed that he didn't know he had. He thought of his family, his friends, the life he still wanted to live. It couldn't end here. Not like this. The parking area with his car seemed miles away, but he pushed on, driven by pure survival instinct. Then, as suddenly as the chase began, it ended. The sound of the pursuit faded away, leaving Alex alone in the silence of the forest. He didn't stop to question it. He just kept running until he saw the familiar shape of his car through the trees. Fumbling with his keys, his hands shaking uncontrollably, he managed to unlock the door and throw himself inside, locking it behind him. He sat there panting, not believing he'd escaped, but not willing to question his luck. Once his breathing slowed and his heart stopped racing, he looked around. The forest was dark now. The only light was the moon peeking through the clouds. He started the car and drove out of there as fast as he could, not stopping until he reached the safety of his home in Reed City. But the story doesn't end with Alex's escape. The next day, despite the fear that clung to him like a second skin, he reported what he had seen to the local authorities. They were skeptical, of course. Stories of the Dogman were local legend, tales told around campfires to scare kids. But then the earnestness in Alex's voice, the raw fear in his eyes, made them take a second look. A search of the area where Alex had his encounter turned up nothing definitive. No tracks, no signs of a creature that large living in the forest. But what they did find were reports from others who had seen something similar. Descriptions that matched Alex's account almost exactly. In the weeks that followed, Alex tried to put the encounter behind him. He went back to work, spent time with his friends and family, but the forest's edge was always in his peripheral vision, a constant reminder of what lurked in the shadows. He stopped hiking, avoiding the outdoors when he could, and when he couldn't, he never went alone. The encounter with this creature changed Alex. He became more cautious, more aware of the world around him, and the mysteries that it held. And while some in Reed City whispered about his tale, questioning its truth, others listened and nodded. They knew the forests of Michigan held secrets, some of them darker and more terrifying than others could imagine. I just found your site today and was intrigued by all the stories I already listened to. I had a few of my own experiences that I thought might interest you. They all happened during the same time span, in Shenandoah National Park in Virginia, which is part of the Blue Ridge Mountains. The year was 1976, and I was 15 years old at the time. My family and another family that we were friends with decided to take a vacation together for 2 weeks in August. We rented a large cabin near Luray, Virginia, on the western side of Shenandoah National Park. The area around Luray is beautiful. Lots of rolling hills covered with forests as far as you can see. Anyway, we arrived late in the afternoon at our cabin and got settled in before dinner time came around. We kids all ran around a bit while our parents unpacked, but I remember that it was an early night because everyone wanted to be fresh for exploring over the next day or so. After breakfast the next day, we all piled into our two cars for what turned out to be an all-day tour through Skyline Drive inside Shenandoah National Park. We stopped several times along the way to check out hiking trails, scenic overlooks, picnicking, etc. At one point during the mid-afternoon of that first day, while driving through a heavily wooded section near Big Meadows Campground, something ran across the road right behind us, but nobody saw it clearly enough since it happened too fast. This was back in the days when kids rode in the back of the station wagons, and so we were the only ones who saw it.
but the grown-ups didn't believe us at first. Then, about an hour later, after passing Skyland Resort, there are many hairpin turns along this stretch. I remember that at this point, I was sitting up closer to the front when my dad's eyes suddenly opened wide, followed by him slapping both hands onto the steering wheel and screaming, "What the hell was that?" He swerved left, barely missing hitting another car coming from the opposite direction. Luckily, there wasn't anyone following close behind us since our friend's car was in front of us. My mother shouted back, asking what he saw. His reply was, "It looked like some kind of ape running across the road." Of course, no one believed him, and we all laughed thinking how ridiculous it was that he thought he saw an ape in the mountains of Virginia. But then, after returning to our cabin, which was located on a small hill with open fields around it, my friend and I were out back throwing a football. We had been playing for about 20 minutes when suddenly we heard loud crashing sounds coming from the tree line about 100 yards away. I remember looking up and seeing something moving fast through trees before disappearing behind them. We both ran inside to tell everyone, but no one took us seriously, except that I could see a certain look in my dad's eyes, and he didn't say anything out loud. I remember thinking that was strange. Later that night, our dads were grilling steaks on the porch, and the mom setting the table. At that point, laughter and fun was how the night was going, even though my friend and I couldn't shake the feeling of what we'd seen in the woods. But we tried to put it aside. It was a vacation after all. Just as we all started to sit down at the table to eat, my little sister tugged at my sleeve, whispering urgently for me to look out the window. The parents heard her whispers, and we all turned to look, and there it was, the ape my dad had almost swerved off the road for. It stood at the edge of the clearing, half hidden behind a large oak tree, looking back at us, its eyes reflecting the porch light. There was a collective gasp, and I dropped the fork I was holding onto the floor. For a moment, nobody moved. It was real. We weren't just seeing things. Dad was the first to react, pushing back from the window and heading for the door, a strange look on his face. "Stay here," he ordered, voice firm. He grabbed a flashlight and the old baseball bat that was by the door. "This is for bears," he joked when we first arrived. We all watched, hearts in our throats, as he stepped into the night, the beam of his flashlight cutting through the darkness, and my mom begging him not to go. The creature, tall and covered in thick fur, watched him approach before turning back towards the trees. Dad followed at a cautious distance, the light bouncing with each of his steps. I can still picture it to this day. Mom then stepped out onto the porch and we followed her, since she was too distracted to shoo us back inside. We could hear the occasional snap of twigs and rustle of leaves as the creature moved through the forest and Dad after it. He later told us he wasn't trying to catch it, just see where it was going, maybe understand what it was. Minutes passed, each one stretching out longer than the last, our imaginations running wild with every shadow that flickered. Then, the back door swung open, and we all spun around and went back inside. Thank goodness it was Dad who stepped in, unharmed, but with a wild look in his eyes. "It's gone," he said, "but I saw it, clear as day. It wasn't an ape. Too big for that. And the way it moved..." He trailed off, shaking his head in disbelief. The rest of the night, we all stayed inside, no one really talking much. The adults whispered in the kitchen and kept glancing at the windows and doors while us kids pretended not to listen, huddled together in the living room. There was talk of park rangers and wildlife experts being called, but in the end, none of that materialized. I'm not sure why. The next 2 weeks passed without another sighting, but the mood had shifted. There was a rule made by the parents for us all to stay together during hikes, and the laughter was a little more forced. As for me, I couldn't help but feel a thrill every time we passed the spot where we'd first seen it, a part of me always scanning the tree line, hoping to catch another glimpse. Now, it's been many years since that trip, but the memory is as vivid as ever for me. It's a story that's been told and retold at family gatherings, each of us adding our own details, but the core of it remains the same. There's something out there, in the Blue Ridge Mountains, something that defies explanation. And I saw it, along with my family and friends. We all did. Hey everyone, Donovan here. Today I've got a story that's a bit out there, even for me. We're going to talk about Josh Paulson, a guy whose story you've got to hear. Josh works over at the Grand Canyon National Park. He is a great guy, and one of those rangers who's seen it all, or so he thought. So, this one afternoon, Josh is doing his thing, walking the trails, making sure hikers aren't turning the place upside down. It's one of those perfect days which mainly means not too hot. Josh is walking one of the less traveled paths. Because let's face it, the guy probably knows every rock and tree like the back of his hand. When he spots something weird with the ground, he finds these huge markings, sort of like footprints. But we're not talking hiking boots here. They're big, and they're deep, like something heavy made them. Now Josh has been around. He's seen what the local wildlife can do. But this is different. These prints, he notices that they're leading off the trail and deeper into the canyon. Most people might think, okay, time to head back to the visitor center. But Josh, he's curious and professional. There's this part of him that needs to know more, and he also wants to know for the sake of the park. So, he follows the footprints, because that's what you do when you're a ranger, and your backyard is one of the world's wonders. He walks for a while, following these strange signs, and ends up in a part of the park that doesn't see a lot of foot traffic. We're talking about the kind of quiet where you can hear your own heartbeat. He's looking around the entire time, scanning the surroundings to try and figure out what made the tracks. And that's when he sees it, this sort of makeshift hut, made out of branches. And this isn't some kiddie fort, it's big and it looks like it took a ton of effort to make. Josh is standing there, looking at this thing that absolutely should not exist, especially in this remote section of the park, and he's got that feeling. You know when the back of your neck gets all tingly? Yeah, that feeling. He takes a good look around, takes notes, the old-fashioned way, pencil and paper. He's scribbling down everything he can see, because even though he doesn't have a camera, this is something you don't just forget. By now, the sun's starting to get lower in the sky, and that's Josh's cue to get back before nightfall. He heads back, but he keeps what he saw to himself, mostly, just telling a few of his colleagues, who he feels will take him seriously. Days turn into weeks, and Josh returns to that area on occasion, trying to figure out what in the world is going on. In fact, his excursions become the highlight of his day, on the days he gets out there. He's out there with his notebook, jotting down every new thing he finds. It's like he's piecing together a puzzle, but can't find the most important pieces. Then, one evening, things get really interesting. He's out there looking around. That's when he hears it. Not a shout, not a howl, just this deep sound that rolls over the hills and through the trees. It rumbles through the surroundings and through his body. It's like nothing he's ever heard before, and it vibrates right through him. He books it back to base and tries to figure out what to do next. So, after that day, Josh is different. He's quieter, more thoughtful. The other rangers notice it too. He's still doing his job, still the same Josh. But there's this spark in his eyes on the days he heads back to that area. The days are ticking by, and Josh is out there every chance he gets looking for more evidence and some closure. Now, you might think this story ends with some grand discovery, some undeniable proof that Josh was right all along, and that he found evidence of a Bigfoot or Sasquatch or something. But it doesn't happen that way. However, he does find something else. Something maybe even more important. Out there, in the silence in the wild, he finds a sense of wonder that he hadn't felt since he was a kid. He's reminded why he became a ranger in the first place, for the love of the untamed, the unexplained, the natural world in all its glory. One evening, as the season's changing and the air's getting that bite to it, Josh decides it's time to stop looking for any proof. He makes one last trip out to the structure, stands there a long while just taking it all in. He leaves behind his notebook, filled with sketches and notes, just to put closure to the whole thing and move on. As he's walking back, the sun dipping low, casting long shadows, he feels eyes on him. Not in a scary way, more like he's part of a club now, a secret club, and the other members are just out of sight, watching him go. Josh never talks much about his experiences after that. When he hears of visitors talking or asking about the creatures of the forest, he just smiles, a small, knowing smile, and goes about his business. And maybe one day, someone else will come across that structure, or hear that deep, resonant sound rolling through the canyon. Maybe then they'll believe, or maybe they'll just find their own sense of wonder, their own reminder that there are things out there beyond our understanding. I just had a totally baffling experience in the middle of a field in southern Alberta, Canada. It literally just happened earlier today. First of all, I've got a bit of a solitary streak, I'll admit. Not that I don't enjoy the company of others, but there's something about being alone in the wild that just feels right to me. Additionally, photography recently became a hobby of mine, a way to capture the things that words couldn't quite do justice. It's not professional by any means, but it's a passion. That's what had me out there that day, hoping to catch a glimpse of something worth capturing through my lens. So, I was just sitting on my ATV with my binoculars, looking at deer on the opposite side of a small valley, about 200 yards away. There were several grazers, along with one very large buck, that I estimated to be around 300 pounds. After I had been watching them for about 10 minutes, something strange occurred. Suddenly, all of the deer became alert and stared towards a section of trees to their left. Then they all ran as a group, off to the right and up the hillside. I kept staring at the section of trees where they were looking, but saw nothing unusual. I kept looking though, hoping to figure out what spooked them, and after about another minute or so, this crazy looking thing came into view. It was taller than any man could possibly be, so a human being was ruled out. This thing's head was well above any tree branches surrounding it, and it kept having to duck as it walked. The body looked thin but muscular, with what appeared to be hairless gray skin. Its arms seemed disproportionately long for its body, as they hung down past its knees, which also appeared bent backwards, like some sort of bird leg, rather than being straightforward like our own legs. The creature stepped out from behind a large tree trunk, onto an open patch of ground, before swinging its head in the opposite direction, and then quickly moving back into cover again behind another tree. It's difficult to say how much time passed between me seeing this thing step out from behind cover, and then disappearing again, because once you see something like this, your mind kind of goes blank, trying to comprehend what you're actually witnessing. Eventually though, I regained my senses enough to look back through my binoculars, hoping it would come back out from behind cover, which thankfully it eventually did. It moved slowly and closer to where the deer had been standing earlier, which put it now within range for me to take pictures using my phone camera attached via a scope adapter. Even though this area is fairly flat terrain-wise, there are still slight rises and depressions throughout most fields here. So, due to those natural land formations, combined with the fact that this creature was hiding behind trees, I wasn't able to see its full body all at once. The first few photos only show it from about waist up, and later ones captured just a little bit more of its legs as well. The whole time I'm taking these pictures, my hands are shaking uncontrollably, so none of them turned out perfect, but some did come out better than others. I didn't want to keep looking through binoculars while also trying to take pictures, because I thought maybe, if it saw me doing that, then maybe it would know I was there and watching it, which might cause it to attack me. Or perhaps the worst case scenario is that if this thing was intelligent enough to realize what I was actually doing, which was capturing evidence of its existence. Anyway, after about 5 minutes or so of standing in the same spot, and moving very slowly closer towards where deer were grazing earlier, something caught its attention in the distance behind. I knew this because it swung its head around quickly, and it made a sudden, jerky move right before disappearing again behind a tree cover. Another minute passed by until it came back into view, but this time walking away from my location and heading straight toward the woods on the opposite side of the valley. Soon after reaching the tree line, it vanished, and I never saw it again. As soon as I realized it wouldn't be returning anytime soon, I eventually decided to pack things up and leave the area myself, too. I'm not sure whether I will ever go back again, though I probably should go back there at least once and take someone else with me. I feel I need another set of eyes on this because nobody else seems to believe stories like these happen all over the world, every single day. This all literally just happened to me earlier today, and I'm still trying to decide who I should take back there with me, but I want to figure that out real quick, because I know it will get lonely knowing that I can't share this experience with anyone else who understands what truly exists up here in Alberta. Anyway, if you know of anyone who can help me understand all of this, please let me know. This happened a few years ago. I was on vacation with my family in a cabin at Shenandoah National Park. My mom, sister, and brother were off doing something while I stayed back to do my own thing for the day, and my dad was driving to the store to pick up some things we needed. I'm an avid hiker, so when my family left, I put on some clothes and headed out into the woods alone. The trail that was near our cabin led up to a peak where you could see for miles around. It was beautiful, but it wasn't too far from civilization, which meant that there were usually other people on it. As soon as I got onto the trail, though, I realized that today would be different because there was nobody else around except me. There's no feeling quite like being completely alone in nature, so I enjoyed every minute of it. Soon enough, though, the sun started setting behind one of the mountains, so I decided to turn back. It wasn't long before darkness quickly fell over everything. I had a flashlight with me, but instead of using it right away, I decided to try walking without any light, since there are times when your eyes can adjust well enough. It was like a test for me. Eventually, though, my night vision just wouldn't kick in properly, which made seeing very difficult. This is about when things began getting strange. Anyone who hikes often knows that if you pay attention enough, you start picking up little signs such as broken branches or rocks placed in certain ways, indicating animals might have passed through earlier. Well, after a while of hiking by myself in pitch blackness, I heard what sounded like someone walking nearby. But whenever I shone a light in the direction the noise seemed to come from, there'd be nothing there. But whatever this thing was, it kept following me. I don't know how many people are aware of this, but when you shine flashlights into complete darkness, sometimes, if somebody is standing directly inside a beam, you can actually make them out even more clearly than during natural light. It's true that their faces will seem clearer and crisper than they would in broad daylight. I know this because one night, while out with my friend, he was doing something I found amusing. So I shone a flashlight on him, and we both laughed. Then, for whatever reason, he put his hand over the light, and what happened next, it's hard to explain, but when his hand went up in front of the beam, everything became distorted. Now, why did I bring up such an odd story? Because whatever was following me down the trail began moving around between the flashes from my flashlight. I didn't notice at first since there weren't any clear breaks in the branches, but eventually, I started hearing movement from several different directions every time the light flashed. Almost like the beam from my flashlight was making the sounds, which would be weird. Nothing ever came into focus, however, and most sounds could be explained away by animals running through the brush. Then again, not everything I was hearing sounded animal-like. When the sound of snapping twigs started to come quickly, I knew these noises couldn't possibly belong to deer scurrying off deeper into the woods. A couple of times, when I shone the flashlight at the ground, I saw footprints in the dirt. However, the footprints didn't match any animal native to the area. Not only were the toes oddly shaped, but the depth of the prints suggested a weight far heavier than any animal could be. Then, as I continued walking down the trail and back towards the cabin, things kept getting weirder. There were times when I felt like something was standing right next to me, breathing into my face, but no matter how hard I tried, I couldn't make anything out. Eventually, I decided enough was enough, so I turned the flashlight on full blast and started swinging around wildly, trying to catch whatever might be following me. It's hard to describe exactly what happened next, but the best I can say is that everything became distorted. Trees, which should have been stationary, began moving like waves crashing against the shore. Stars blinked and shifted positions across the sky until the entire world seemed to twist sideways. The worst part, though, despite the intensity of the beam, only darkness filled the space around. Not a single detail came into focus. This lasted several minutes before finally subsiding, and thankfully that's when things started to return to somewhat normal. I certainly did not feel like I was alone out there, and I don't mean that in a good way. I decided to run back to the cabin. I have to admit that I was terrified that night would take a wrong turn and end up lost, or worse, dead. But somehow, I managed to find the correct path and eventually reach my destination without incident. Thinking back now, I realize I never heard noises once I had the flashlight on full blast, or while running back. Maybe they were scared off, or maybe they just gave up. Either way, I made it home safely. And let's just say that I'll never feel overly confident in the woods ever again. I now realize that nature has way more power than man ever will. I had a solo winter camping trip planned. I know it sounds like a crazy thing to do, but winter camping can be pretty fun if you are prepared for the weather. Plus, I had gotten some new camping gear for Christmas, and I just couldn't wait until summer to try it out. I was no stranger to winter camping, but it had been a while since I had my four-season tent out. I had organized to head to a hike-in campsite at local state forest lands, about 5 miles from the access road. The trails weren't groomed that time of year, so I had to snowshoe in. It was pretty tiring, but the one nice thing about winter camping is you can haul all your gear in on a sled, so no backpacks are needed. There were no other cars in the parking area, and there were no signs of any other campers. Of course, this isn't unusual in the dead of winter, since there are not that many people who like camping when temperatures get below freezing. I finally got settled into my campsite, and after packing down enough snow to set up the tent, things started to look pretty nice. According to the map, there was an easy snowshoeing trail nearby, along a scenic river that I was excited to get to the following morning. It's not unusual for the forest to be a bit quieter in the winter. Snow muffles sound. And yet, I hadn't noticed any wildlife on my hike in. I didn't think it was too strange at the time, but looking back, there was definitely something wrong right from the get-go. I had just started to boil some water to cook dinner when I heard something flying overhead. A shadow passed by, but I couldn't see what it was coming from. But I could tell that it was big, maybe an eagle or a great horned owl. I tried to find it, but didn't see where it went. My campsite was surrounded by trees, so it didn't feel unusual to see a large bird around. The rest of the evening was uneventful. I settled in for the night and was toasty warm in my sleeping bag. I was just about to drift off to sleep when I heard a strange sound. Well, the sound itself wasn't strange, but it was the location. It was the sound of a bird flapping its wings, but it sounded like it was just outside the tent. I got my headlamp out and started to unzip the tent to chase whatever it was away. I didn't see anything immediately, so I slipped on my boots and stepped just out of the tent to look around. I didn't want to spend much time outside since it was getting cold. I pointed my light towards the forest. I didn't see anything in the trees, but something reflected back off the light, closer to the ground. There was no mistaking it, they were eyes. I didn't see the creature when I first looked, because it was standing between the trees. The only thing that gave it away was its eyes. If you didn't look close enough, It looked like maybe the outline of a small tree standing amongst the others, but it wasn't. I could now see that it looked like the dark outline of a man, but with wings. The eyes were about level with mine. I knew it wasn't human because our eyes don't reflect light like that. This looked like the reflection you see when you shine a light on a cat at night. It was staring directly at me, but it didn't move. I screamed at it, hoping that would scare it off, but it just stood there motionless and staring back at me. I didn't have any weapons on me except a small utility knife, and was now starting to worry about protecting myself if need be. Maybe I could bludgeon the thing with my fuel canister. I don't know. I couldn't hike out of there until the morning. Plus, I would have to walk right past the creature in order to leave. I didn't want to just go back into my tent, because then I wouldn't be able to see what it was doing. But there really wasn't a better option since I wasn't all geared up to be out in the cold. So that's what I ended up doing. I laid there awake all night, but the creature didn't bother me again. I looked for signs of it in the morning as I was packing up camp. There were no tracks anywhere, but I did find an assortment of small animal bones organized into a ring around where my campfire had been. I'm not great at identifying bones, but I would guess they were maybe raccoon or fox sized. After seeing that, didn't stick around to look for anything else. I packed my gear in record time and booked it out of there. As I was leaving, I heard the sound of wings again, but again I didn't see the creature, and I didn't stay to look for it either. I don't have any explanation for any of it. I never told my friends or family. Nobody would believe I saw some birdman creature in the forest. There isn't a great ending to this story. I never figured out what the beast wanted or what the assortment of bones meant. It didn't exactly try to harm me, and it knew where I was that entire night. So I figure that if it had wanted me dead, I would be dead. I don't know if I trespassed on its territory or set up camp right where it lives or what. I can say for certain that I'm never going back there. So if it was trying to scare me off, it did a damn good job. I forget a lot of things. Small things, mostly. The big things, the really important things, I never forget. I remember the shoes my wife was wearing on our first date. I remember the name of the doctor who delivered our child. I remember those things. For the most part, they're all good. They're all happy memories. I guess that speaks to the quality of my life, huh? I shouldn't complain, and normally I don't. There is one memory, though, from a time before all that happiness, that I've never been able to shake. I'd forget it if I could, but it's important, so we don't really get to decide which memories we keep, do we? I was camping in the backyard of my grandparents' property. They owned a few acres just outside of town, and turning all that land into my personal getaway was a highlight of my teen years. I'd fish at their little pond. I'd invite a few friends if I was in the partying mood. On this particular night, I was alone. I was stargazing. Out there, away from the city lights, looking up at the night sky. That's as close to peace as you can get. I knew it even back then. I drifted asleep on the blanket I'd rolled out. That often happened. I'd wake up with a few bug bites, but I was never worse for wear. This time I woke up early. I didn't open my eyes to the light of the dawn. I didn't roll over into a face full of morning dew. It couldn't have been later than 3 a.m. Something was howling. I grabbed my flashlight and cut the beam across the land. My free hand was already shakily searching for the pepper spray that I knew was somewhere close. I always kept it nearby, even if my grandparents never had issues with bears or coyotes. But my light didn't land on a coyote. It landed on the naked back of a man. He was emaciated. I could count the ridges on his spine. He was facing away from me at first, hunched over something that he tore at with his hands. I didn't say a word. How could I? What I was seeing was worse than any wild animal. Animals had behavior patterns. You could predict things about them. Men, especially men looking like the one I saw, were unpredictable. But then I saw him change. I saw him change, and I couldn't stop myself from screaming. At first, it looked like his spine was wriggling underneath his skin. It jerked and curled and pushed up against his flesh. His shoulders hunched, and his hands slapped the ground. Then the fur started sprouting. It was like watching the time lapse of a growing seed. The dark strands poked up from his skin and grew into a thick forest. When my screaming startled him, he whipped around. His face was no longer human. It was canine. If I hadn't known any better, I would have thought the thing in front of me was just a dog. A sick dog, but a dog surely. Yet I'd just seen it transform. Its eyes were still human. They looked back at me with a sadness at first, as if the creature was maybe embarrassed. Then its gaze was angry. I'd seen something I shouldn't have. It was going to make me pay. It was on me in a second. I could barely backpedal out of its reach. I was still on all fours, and I watched its long claws carve through my blanket with ease. It roared. I sprayed it in the face with my pepper spray. It yowled and recoiled, and I knew that was my only chance to run. I got to my feet and sprinted for my grandparents' home. It was further than I remembered. With every step, I was praying that the front door would be unlocked. If I had to fumble with my key, I'd be done for. I'm sure my grandparents feared it too. That's probably why. I sprinted, panted. I ignored the painful white-hot stitch in my side. I risked a glance back toward the monster. It was done pawing at its eyes. It was glaring back at me again. Then it was running. God, it was running. It tore across the earth like a machine. The rumble in its chest may as well have been a screaming engine. It shredded the ground, kicked up the grass and dirt, and it closed in on me with ease. But I was already on the front porch. I was already wrapping my fingers around the door handle. Then I burst inside. I crashed onto my face and forearms. I turned around wildly and kicked the door shut. The beast didn't have time to slow down. It slammed into the door. I heard it crumple against the solid wood. I scrambled as quickly as I could, turning the latch as it started to rake its claws against the frame. It spit and cackled and made sounds no animal should make. The ruckus woke my grandparents, of course. My grandfather fired a rifle through the door 3 times. That quieted the monster down. We peeked through the windows. We opened the front door. It was gone, of course. It was smart enough to know that it couldn't contend with a bullet. It was a long time before I slept outside again. The nightmares were pretty consistent. They were unforgiving. Sometimes it felt like the moment I closed my eyes, I'd be back in that chase. I wasn't sure that I could escape the monster every time. I'm sure my grandparents feared it too. That's probably why we never talked about it. Although I did catch my grandfather peeking through the windows whenever the night got dark. Eventually, I got brave. Eventually, I laid down beneath those stars again. I haven't seen the creature since, but that doesn't mean I've forgotten it. I always remember the important things. In the back half of my life, that means carrying a gun when I'm outside. I was headed toward my car on the last leg of my evening jog. I preferred jogging at the state park near my house instead of the road. I had seen one too many pedestrian accidents in my community to feel safe running on the roads in the evening hours. Although, after my experience in the park, I don't feel safe running there anymore either. I don't typically jog late at night, but my shift ran a little longer than usual. I will say that the park is a little more remote than is probably safe for night adventures. I haven't seen any weird people there after dark, but we do have quite a robust wildlife population in the area. Think, bears, cougars, wolves, moose. I was smart about it. I carried bear spray and made sure to play music on my phone when I was out after dark. Most animals, in my experience, will stay away from you if they hear you coming. I was maybe 2 miles from the car when I stopped to take a breather. I grabbed some water from my pack and decided to walk for a moment. The sun had set, but there was still some light left. I wasn't worried yet, but I knew I had to keep moving if I wanted to get out of there before dark. All of a sudden, an orange light shone behind me. It was like the sun came out for a moment. I knew there was nothing out there that could make a light that bright. It definitely wasn't someone's flashlight or even headlights from a vehicle. It was as bright as the sun. The whole forest ahead of me lit up in an orange glow. I turned around to see if I could find the source of the light, and it disappeared just as suddenly as it had arrived. However, standing behind me in the near darkness was a single deer. The moment I had turned around, I was hit with a stench of death and decomposition. It's so overpowering that I just about hit my knees. And like I said, it wasn't there a moment ago. I knew right away that it was coming from the deer. The creature was thin with ribs protruding through its skin. I was surprised its legs could support its weight. I figured it must be sick of have some type of gangrenous wound on it somewhere to be causing that type of stench. Despite its ill health, it had a rack of antlers spanning twice the width of its body. I almost felt bad for the creature, believing it was most likely sick and very, very old, but there was something else. I couldn't pinpoint the reason then, but I knew there was something else wrong. I tried to shoo the deer away, but it didn't budge. I still had a ways to go to get to my car, and I didn't want to turn my back on it. After failing to scare it away yet another time, I did decide to turn around and head toward my car. As soon as I turned my back, the orange light lit up the sky again. I spun around to face the deer. It was standing in the same place I had left it. I didn't know how, but I knew it had something to do with the light and the unmovable stench of death that filled the air. Its eyes were dark and soulless. "What the hell are you?" I asked it. And then the orange light returned, glowing bright like the sun, behind the deer. The whole forest was now lit with this artificial daylight. The deer then looked at me and began to lift its head as I watched its antlers turn upside down, like they were melting. They looked soft and started dripping, literally melting into the forest floor. But that wasn't all. The creature's fur began to slough off, exposing rotting skin and muscle underneath, and in some places, exposed bone. The skin of its face peeled back and rolled down its neck, like someone put a torch to it. The creature's entire skull was exposed, and its eyes were missing. Its jaw cracked open and fell to the ground, leaving its tongue nowhere to go but to fall in front of its neck. To say I was horrified was an understatement. My hands were shaking so badly that I couldn't get my bear spray out of its holster. I didn't know if the spray would have any effect on this thing, but it was all I had. I took a few stumbling steps backwards, and then the orange light ceased. Darkness fell upon the forest, and the creature standing before me was a deer once again. I had asked it what it was, and it showed me. It revealed its real and total self to me. I wondered what it wanted with me, but I didn't dare ask. I couldn't imagine it was anything good, so I turned and I ran. I don't think I've ever ran that fast before in my life. The creature didn't chase me, and I didn't experience the orange light shining again in the sky. Part of me thinks the creature was just screwing with me, because something that could do that could have probably made quick work of me if it wanted to. I don't know why it let me go, but I can tell you one thing for certain, and it's that I am staying the hell out of the forest after dark. Brockway Mountain Drive in Michigan is one of the most beautiful places in the world. I was in the service for almost 10 years. I saw a lot of the world, and still, that place between Copper Harbor and the Upson Lake Nature Sanctuary is one of the most beautiful. But on that day in December, the beauty was lost on me. My car was a mess. It was this rusted old coughing Ford Escort mini station wagon. It was on its last breath, but I really thought I could squeeze one more winter out from it. But as I rolled to the top of the Brockway Plateau just west of Copper Harbor, I had had enough. It died. It would not start, and it immediately got cold as all get out outside. I already had a rusted out floorboard that caused snow and slush to spit up in my face while I was driving, and the passenger window was double thick saran wrap duct taped together. When it died on the top of the hill, I took a minute and got out and had a smoke. I then prepared for the ritual. The ritual was me heaving to push the car down the hill and pop the clutch to get it started. Today, my hope was only to make it back home. I had to get a new car. The time had finally come. I put it in neutral and pushed the Escort to the edge of the plateau, and with the driver's door open, gave her one last shove and then jumped in. Down the hill I went. I popped the clutch, and for the first time, the damn thing did not turn over. It rolled to the lull at the bottom of the road and just stopped. Crap. Now I was stuck here until someone came along to give me a ride, and I had no idea how long that was going to be. And to make things worse, I was down to my last smoke. I did not even bother to push the Escort off the road. I was so pissed off I just sat there and lit up my last Marlboro. I was leaning back, cold as hell and facing west, looking at the snow, trees, and the tiny, unlined, patched up, pothole-ridden pavement when a giant animal walks dead center. It was about 200 yards away. I almost choked on my cigarette. I felt all the hair on my body standing straight up. I lived in the Upper Peninsula, and we got so used to things, we sometimes forget that we are in the wilderness up here. And what the hell was this thing? I remember thinking, oh my God, as it stopped in the middle of the road and just started casually walking towards me. It was so terrifying for so many reasons. It was big, and it was coming at me. I was alone in a car that would not start. I had no idea what the hell it was. I immediately started turning the ignition. Come on, come on, come on, I started screaming. I was about to get out and run back up to the hill to the plateau, to the east behind me, the same hill I just had rolled down. But to my shock, the Escort started. Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you. I was so happy. Then, this crazy-looking walking dog started yelling and began charging at me on all fours like a bull galloping at me. I wheeled the Escort wagon around and puttered my way up the hill. I had already accepted death. That Escort wagon would not make it get away from a child on a big wheel. All I could do was floor it and hope I purred up the hill and made it over the peak to the other side, headed toward Copper Harbor. I was so thankful the car did not die on me. I looked back and saw the devil spawn standing on the top of the hill, all proud and boastful, howling and screaming. Please make it back to town, I kept saying. And I made it back to town. After that, I did get another car, but I never sold the Escort. I just could not part with her after she had saved my life from that dog man. What's your hobby? Personally, I've had a lot of them over the years, and sometimes it feels like I pick out a new one each summer. 3 years ago, it was kayaking. 2 years ago, I had a stint as a passionate birdwatcher. Don't ask me why, I must have been going through something. But last year's hobby is the hobby I want to talk about. Last year, along the same river, I often kayaked in the days past. I found a set of footprints. They were strange enough that I made a little mold and brought them home with me. I think for a lot of my friends, seeing those feet displayed on my coffee table was a little alarming. At first, you see, they just looked like the prints of any human. When I explained where I saw them, I sounded more like a kook than a curious adventurer. And that's what I was. I was curious and I set on a path of adventure. It all sounded so friendly and fun and fascinating back then. The feet were too big. That's what made them special. They were larger than any human's feet could possibly be. I did the research. Maybe there have been a few historical exceptions, but I didn't imagine that some giant had casually strolled barefoot through my area. They belonged to something else then. You see where I'm going with this, don't you? Anyway, that brings me to my most recent hobby. Last summer, I was a monster hunter. The prints became my hyperfixation. I took pictures of them and compared them to other findings online. I returned to the riverbed and searched for more evidence of whatever creature had left them. For a long time, I didn't have any luck. I found similar prints online, sure. But what did that prove? It certainly didn't rally any of my friends to my cause. No one suddenly approved of my fascination. In fact, the people around me were all begging me to move on to my next hobby. There was a limit to how often they wanted to hear about feet, I suppose. And I can't blame them. Looking back, I should have listened. They didn't know it, but they were warning me at the time. If I had moved on to something else, I wouldn't have gotten myself into so much trouble. I returned to the river with a renewed sense of purpose. The season was ending, and I wanted to be able to hoist something above my head that proved my fixation was justified. Did I know what that something would be? Absolutely not. So I did exactly as I'd done before. I combed the mud for more prints. At least a second discovery would prove that the first one wasn't a fluke. This time, I found them. I found the prints and the feet and the monster they were attached to. And I wished at that moment that I'd stuck to the bird watching. I didn't even notice it at first. The hulking mass was so large, squatting down by the river, that I couldn't recognize it as a living thing. My peripherals told me it was a stone, a boulder. Then it moved. It stood upright and erect. A stream of water ran from its large mouth and dribbled down its chest, sticking to the thick brown fur that covered its body. I'd never felt so small. Sure enough, it was a giant. And sure enough, looking down to the massive feet that sunk into the mud, it was the monster I'd been hunting for. Now that it was in my sights, I didn't know what to do. I froze and it turned, and all at once I realized I was cornered. Behind me was a forest of trees and brush that I knew I couldn't navigate quickly. The creature's legs were long and powerful. It would catch me in no time at all. I was lucky, I guess, that when it turned, it wasn't snarling. It didn't meet my gaze and roar. It didn't charge my position and leave the imprint of my corpse alongside its footprints. It could have. I could see the rippling musculature, even through its thick coat. I could see in the scars on its face, its strangely ape-like face, that it had fought and survived things a lot tougher than me. It stared. It heaved, letting out a mighty breath, and then it walked away. It crossed the river. The water only reached its chest at depths that I could have been swept away. It crossed and disappeared into the trees on the other side. Still, I was frozen. Something startled me out of the shock, I guess. I was safe after all, and I was facing what could have been my last chance at documenting my encounter. I didn't get any pictures of the beast, but I could still capture its prints. That was all I needed to begin with, right? Surely photographs of fresher impressions would confirm all of the theories I'd thrown around with my friends. I took the pictures. I sent them out. I had a dozen more late-night conversations, confessing my encounter and everything I'd felt that moment. I went into meticulous detail, ensuring that my friends would be able to visualize exactly what I'd seen, and none of them believed me. That's the other edge of this sword, isn't it? Even if you've discovered the truth, even if you've found the proof to back it up, that doesn't mean the claims aren't outlandish. That doesn't mean anyone else is going to let that truth invade their beliefs and change how they view the world. None of my friends wanted to believe in the monster I saw. I can't blame them. I still think about that encounter sometimes. I still have nightmares imagining the 100 other ways that moment could have gone. I still ramble about the creature when I've had too many drinks. I still prefer the birds. The heat had been something that year. Insufferable. It had been so hot that a person might do anything to escape the Texas sun. I know I was willing to do a lot. I was willing to agree to take a trip with my friends, a little excursion to the west of the town we all grew up in. I was even willing to help pitch our tents right along the riverbed, only to make our trek to the cool water that much shorter in the mornings. It was cold by the river, and we were thankful for that. It was even colder with the water up to your shins. And that was glorious. Walk far enough out and you might even find the tender current rising as high as your shoulders. We would have held our heads underwater for hours if we could have just to escape the sun. Lucky for us, the trees were gracious. The cedar and elm formed a ramshackle canopy, a poor imitation of a real jungle, but they did enough to filter out the sky's harshest rays. We thought we'd found a little weekend of heaven, but we could not have been more wrong. Between the four of us campers, there was a firefighter, a welder, an aspiring survivalist vlogger, and a line cook. Under normal circumstances, we could have thrived out there. We could have established our own little community and fallen off the grid if we felt like it. Circumstances became abnormal on the second night. While the rest of us retired, the firefighter opted for a late night swim. None of us were particularly concerned, considering the river never flowed at a dangerous pace. After we zipped our tents shut, we heard some splashing. That was uncharacteristic of the firefighter. We listened, each of us isolated in our tents, when we heard a grunt and a sudden scream, and we simultaneously leapt to action. All three of us discovered that we weren't the type to be paralyzed by our fear in that very moment. Despite our quickness, when we emerged from our tents, the firefighter was gone. The river was still. The woods were quiet. We laughed and congratulated our friend on a prank well pulled. But he didn't come back. We waited. We searched the area as well as we could in the dark. Exhaustion was heavy in our bones by the time dawn started to arrive. It became easier to search the more light that we had. The survivalists found some tracks leading away from the water, so we all followed them. Funny enough, the tracks led to where we parked our vehicles. We all had a laugh as we made our way back to the road. We had set into a dire panic instead of considering that the firefighter had just gotten spooked and ran for the cars. We figured that he was probably still asleep in the back seat of his vehicle. But we were wrong about that too. His car was gone. He hadn't just been spooked, he had been terrified. He left his phone back at camp, incapable of calling the rest of us. Before we could finish scratching our heads, a branch snapped in the woods behind us. Something was moving in there. It was heavy. It had to have circled around us as we arrived on the road, cutting us off from our campsite, cutting us off from our gear, our keys. But we weren't worried, at least not yet. We were shaken up, sure. We were suspicious, but we didn't know what we were facing yet. Then, when a man walked out of the woods with a face like a dog's, fear swallowed us whole. The stranger was covered in fur, and there was wetness in its eyes. Spit dribbled from its fanged mouth. Its upright ears flicked in the wind, turned to chase the sounds of the woods around us. Those ears folded flat against its skull when the creature's eyes narrowed at us. This must have been what had chased our friend. We didn't blame him for running. The vlogger muttered and pointed out that his keys were still in his truck. We now had a chance to get out of there after all. So we took it. We broke into a sprint all at the same time. Us three and the monster. We all vaulted over the hood of my small car and flung open the doors to the vlogger's truck. We jumped inside. Two of us in the back seat, one up front. Up front, the vlogger got his door shut just before the beast arrived. The two of us in the back weren't so lucky. A clawed hand swiped for my leg as I got in. I pulled it back just in time. The creature was moving too fast to stop when it closed in on the truck. It crashed into the door, slamming its own limb in the jam. When it recoiled to try a second time, we lunged forward and grabbed the handle. When the lock clicked, saving us all, it raked its long claws furiously against the glass. By then, the engine started, which made the creature flinch and jump back, clearing enough of a path for us to reverse and peel out of there. We left our other cars behind. We left everything behind. We found the firefighter at his house. He actually lived the closest. None of us said a word, all knowing that we'd all seen something that defied explanation. We stayed there for the night, and when the next day came, we went back for the cars. Whatever was left at the campsite stayed there. None of us wanted to go back in to gather anything. We'd had enough of a brush with a monster. We weren't going to open ourselves to a second encounter. It's been a few years now, and the story hasn't come up between us. None of us has told a soul, not as far as I can tell. I guess that makes you all the first, at least outside of our group. I'm sure you'll forget about it quicker than the rest of us. Unless maybe you've seen something too. Joshua Tree National Park hosts the full range of Southern California's arid beauty. The wonder of the state's desert biomes is what first encouraged me to begin working in the region as a member of the National Park Service. For a long time, it was perfect, and then it wasn't. There's a stone in Joshua Tree that attracts tourists from all over the world. It's the size of a small building and the shape of a skull. Its massive, hollowed-out eyes are permanently fixated on the dry expanse of the park. I love that stone. I think maybe it loves me too. I know that's a weird thing to say. My skin crawls when I commit those words to paper. I'm only asking you to hear me out because it might be true. If it isn't love, it's something equally strong. Normally, to get a view of Joshua's stone skull, you have to wade between pockets of tourists and wait in line just for the chance of a brief photo op. If you arrive particularly early or particularly late, sometimes the crowd is a little thinner. When you work the park like I did, you know to visit the stone before the sun rises or after it sets. It's prettier in the dark, illuminated by the stars and the luminous pollution of California's distant cities. I was already headed toward the stone when I found him on the side of the trail, the man that cost me everything. He was dressed in worn clothing that looked to be centuries old. His feet were bare, and his hair was long and knotted. He didn't speak to me. He didn't call out or signal for help. He stood upright and immobile right on the edge of the trail, waiting. "Hello?" I remember asking his name. "What are you doing out here?" The park had chased away the last of the tourists nearly an hour before. This man looked like he had just crawled in from the desert. When he made no effort to reply, I reached out to touch him. His body wasn't warm. It was the same cool, ambient temperature as the rest of the air around us. He was more of the desert. Still, there was no response. I turned away from him briefly to contact my peers over the radio. I repeated his description and requested an emergency transport. When I looked back, the man was gone. Only the outline of his feet lingered in the dirt. I searched for a trail, anything to lead me back to him. There was nothing. I was alone. Then there was a howl. Wolves weren't common in the park, at least not around the well-traveled areas. I looked for one anyway, scanning the horizon for any signs of a wild dog or coyote. The howl sounded canine, at least. What I saw wasn't a dog at all. It was standing upright, long-limbed but definitely humanoid. It started far away, but even with the great distance between us, I could tell the creature was approaching 7 feet tall. It threw its head back and howled again. Its protruding nose and jaw became visible, framed by the faint glow on the horizon. I did what felt natural. I ran for my life. I didn't know where to go except toward the skull. I sprinted as quickly as I could, kicking up dust and debris all along the trail. I cut across the unmarked paths where I could, trampling the brush and undergrowth. I didn't risk a glance back, but I knew it was behind me. I could hear its claws slicing through the same stems and stalks that I was flattening with my boots. I could feel its deep, heavy breathing reverberating in my bones. I never thought my life would flash before my eyes, not in my line of work. Supervising tourist destinations isn't exactly the most dangerous of park ranger responsibilities. That night, I saw it all. I saw my 5th birthday and my father's funeral. I saw my partner and our child. It felt like I was running toward those moments, toward the idea of making more of those memories. But in reality, I was headed somewhere else. I was headed toward the skull, and finally its broad dome-shaped crown was overlooking my insignificant body as I ran across the desert. I could see its brow and its eye sockets, then the grooves that always looked a little too much like teeth. The skull isn't haunted, I know that. It isn't possessed. Those ideas make for great conversation when you're a one-time visitor to Joshua Tree, but none of the rumors are true. Maybe it is sacred though, somehow. Maybe it is a safe place. I ran up the hill surrounding the stone, and when I finally reached its base, I slipped. I crashed face first into the dirt and skidded to what I was sure would be my end. I weakly rolled onto my shoulder and looked back the way I'd come. The monster wasn't there. It wasn't breathing down my neck or raising a clawed hand to finish our chase. It wasn't circling the perimeter, waiting for the perfect time to strike. It was just gone, as if the skull had repelled it. I inched back toward the desert and found more footprints in the dirt, bare human footprints. When my peers arrived, prepared to escort the stranger back to our medical facility, I was hysterical. I didn't know how to stop talking about what I'd seen, even as the days stretched into weeks. I was released from the service shortly after that, with instructions to consider my mental health. They cast me out and told me to keep quiet. That's why I'm talking. That's why I'm telling the story. There must be a reason they want to keep it secret, right? Someone doesn't want the world to know about the man in the desert. Someone doesn't want the world to know that the skull-shaped rock in Joshua Tree might actually be protecting us.